Chapter 10 Vela! The worn-down raccoon man attempted to get the deranged cockatoo woman's attention. But Velrala's eyes seemed to be seeing things the rest of us could not. Horrible things, if the growing look of terror spreading across her face was anything to go by.
You!
She said, and pointed at Zoe.
You must be careful, m'lady! You must!
Do not worry, dear Vela.
The catwoman said in a mellow tone.
I will be just fine.
But you have to prepare yourself,
Velrala urged, with a note of distress still high in her voice. Zoe put her arm around the cockatoo woman and stood beside her.
What must I do?
Bowden gave my catwife a grateful yet exhausted smile for playing along with the poor, confused woman. Velrala seemed just as relieved someone was listening to her. And before she could do anything else, she threw her arms around Zoe's neck in a giant hug.
Thank you!
She sobbed brokenly before she pulled back, wiped her face free of any tears, and marched over to a vase filled with indigo flowers. Then we all watched as she painstakingly picked out just the right blossom to her invisible specifications and brought it over to the catwoman.
Vel,
Bowden tried again. But Amaya gently stopped him from saying anything more with a hand on his arm.
Please,
Vela said to Zoe, as she wove the blossom into her ebony hair.
Keep this with you tonight. It will keep you safe.
I will,
Zoe promised without skipping a beat, and smiled kindly at the sick woman.
Good. That's good. Bodhi?
Vela asked, and she practically collapsed in the raccoon man's arms.
I'm ready to go back upstairs now.
All right, love, Bowden said as he helped guide her toward the stairs. Will you both be all right here on your own? I asked.
We will manage, he said,
and the two of them waved at us before they disappeared. You can probably take that out now, I told Zoe. She said the same thing about a bell I should always carry, but it's currently on my bedside table, and I don't foresee any life or death situations where a dainty little bell is my weapon of choice.
Is she unwell?
She asked. And I looked around at everyone's curious faces. All of them had various expressions of concern, and they were all looking at me for an answer.
She's overly exhausted, I said.
Maybe ill, but we don't know what's causing her condition. Bowden has been with her the most since we left and worries she's losing her mind.
Oh, poor thing,
Shay sighed.
If only wounds of the mind were easy to heal, then I would say bring her back down. But if it is truly insanity, I'm afraid even I cannot make a difference. Poor, poor thing.
I think I'll keep the flower,
Zoe decided as she caressed the silky petals with her thin fingers.
For luck.
And it goes nicely with your dress,
Shay added.
Now that everything is settled, Horace said and gallantly offered his hand to the ibex woman standing beside him. Shall we?
We shall,
she declared, as she primly grasped his fingers. And with that, all of us were off to the Terran Palace. The fanfare we soon encountered practically from the second we stepped foot into the upper echelon was insane. Music and streamers of various colors were being thrown around the streets leading up to the palace as Terrans, young and old, and from upper and lower, mingled, danced, and made merry. Nada usually had pretty kickin' parties, but there was something about the exuberant joy pouring out of each and every citizen that was unlike any celebration I'd seen anywhere else. Huge vats of what appeared to be mead were rolled out and currently cooking over large fires. Buxom barmaidens lined the streets carrying fistfuls of tankards, and they were passing them out to anybody around with empty hands. All of us were quickly bestowed with one of these giant mugs of alcohol, even Rylan, which I had to rectify by snatching the cup from him before he could drink more than half.
"Oh, come on, Dad!"
Rylan said, as he tried to grab the tankard back from me. But I raised it above his head and then chugged it in one go.
"No fair! Moz gets to drink!"
"Moz is not my kid. You are. And I'm pretty sure if you start now, you won't even make it inside the palace before you become drunk off your ass." I tossed the empty tankard to someone passing by with a tray full of other empties. Don't argue with me on this, trust me. You'll have a way better time tonight if you stay sober. After slamming down half of Rylan's mug,
I only took sips of the strong alcohol from then on, because I wanted all of my faculties in place. And I knew from my own experience that the sober advice was for me as much as it was for him. I knew I made the right decision, since I was already feeling abuzz by the time we all finally made it to the palace doors. We were then escorted through the opulent corridors and toward where the festive cacophony of noise was taking place. When we arrived, our party was announced to the banquet hall at large, but nobody seemed to really be paying attention due to all the revelry taking place. Instead of designated tables where people were seated based on status, this gala seemed a lot more lackadaisical as far as where people were situated. From what I could tell, you simply picked a place on the floor with enough cushions and stuck with it. Or you mingled around the large open hall and never really committed to one place or the other. I wasn't really sure what everyone preferred. But Mr. Jenner decided to take this into his own hands and struck out for a nicely padded area big enough for our whole crew.
"Feel free to flit about, but I will remain here for the night," the koala man said as he hunkered down on top of one of the comfiest-looking pillows. "These old bones can save this space for all of us just as long as one of you keeps bringing me food and wine." "I'll be your errand boy, Mr. Jenner,"
Ryland piped up. And I glanced at him.
"Oh, much obliged, laddie,"
Jenner said, as he made himself even more comfortable by reclining back against two more pillows. He said he would be saving the space for all of us, but so far it looked like he was building his own personal nest.
"Now, go get me some of that ale before the night gets old, and so do I."
"Right away, sir,"
Ryland said, and then zipped off on his task.
"Oh, such a kind boy,"
the older man sighed as he removed his monocle and stashed it away in his jacket.
"Yeah,"
I said, as I glared after the kid with suspicion. "He's nice, but also manipulative, so watch out."
"I think I have an adolescent boy handled on my end," he said sarcastically, and I only snorted and shook my head.
"If you say so," I held up my hands. "But any trouble he gets into is on you."
"Oh, paw,"
he grumbled and shooed me away. There was nothing for it after that, and our group broke apart in order to investigate what this banquet had to offer.
"Ambassador!"
A long-necked man I knew by the name of Bardis waved me over. And as much as I didn't really like the stubborn man who only a few days ago wanted to keep the lowers from ascending, I still smiled at him and made my way over. "Asher Bardis," I greeted with a nod. "I hope you're well."
"Yes, indeed,"
the brontosaur man said as he patted his wide middle.
"Definitely thanks to you and your Natavian allies. You see, it's like I've been saying all along, the way forward is through unity."
"Yeah," I said with a terse smile. That was not what the fat fuck was preaching about earlier.
"Ambassador, can I borrow you for a moment?"
Leader Zare asked from behind me, and I felt immensely grateful for his timing as he moved us away from the irritating man.
"I thought you could use a rescue from that twit."
"You thought right," I said, and clasped the man's forearm in gratitude.
"Oh, the ladies Brightwood look quite dashing today, if I do say so,"
Zare commented with a charming smile.
"You are too kind, leader,"
Shay demurred as she held out her hand so the alligator elder could give it a quick peck. Suddenly, a dozen trumpets heralded the arrival of the VIPs who had yet to arrive, and the entire banquet hall was silent as the announcer spoke from the entrance of the large doors.
"Presenting Lord Gris, the Lady Issa, Regent Siskern, and Lady Zara,"
the guy at the door cried out, and the hall erupted in thunderous applause.
"Now they would all like you to join them in the dance that will strengthen their union and bring them plentiful heirs."
This was the cue most of the men in attendance were waiting for to bring their wives out to the large open area in the center of the room. My gut twisted as a small bit of stage fright overwhelmed me, and for a second my mind went utterly blank of all the steps I'd learned with Zoe and Jenner. But then, the familiar metronomic drumbeat started, followed by tinny wind instruments and dulcimer-like stringed instruments, and they all combined in a foreign sound similar to something Eastern European, like in The Witcher. and as the music seeped into my bones, it didn't matter if I couldn't remember the steps with my mind, because my body had it memorized even better, and it was easy to fall in line with Zoe, Shay, and everyone else. Then the beat increased, and our movements became more frenzied yet powerful, as the group did them all together in one undulating wave. The part that came next always confused me in practice, but Jenner and Shay constantly told me this would make a lot more sense when we did it for real, and I suddenly knew what they were talking about. When the tempo changed, it was only natural to turn inward where the two couples were now in the center. Then the intricate weaving step thing that always threw me off suddenly came easier when I had a center point to focus on and other bodies for reference. My lungs cinched tight from the lack of oxygen. But we were almost at the end of the dance, so I dug deep and danced harder until the final crescendo cascaded to an end. The whole hall exploded into cheers and applause when the wedding dance was over, and I gathered my two wives in a fierce hug. I was so stinkin' proud of us, and maybe it was because of the festivities, but I felt the bonds I had with them thrum brightly inside my chest, like little golden hummingbirds.
Can you feel it?
Shay asked, as she wrapped one arm around my waist.
I feel something,
Zoe replied, and she rubbed a hand over the center of her chest right where I felt my own fluttering sensation.
The dance is magic,
the Phoenix woman whispered.
It not only strengthens the bond for the newly married, but it also strengthens all bonds of marriage, no matter how old.
It's beautiful,
Zoe said, as a high blush colored her pale cheeks. And the three of us came together in a passionate embrace. Then a gong blared around the banquet hall, and the three of us sprung apart with guilty expressions and sheepish smiles. But when I looked around, it appeared as if we weren't the only ones caught up in the moment of happy matrimony. As people all around the hall began to laugh and disperse the tension, the lightheartedness returned to the atmosphere. I spotted Mech in the crowd waving at us with his wife and daughter, and I waved back and led us toward them. Dawn was dressed in a gown of such silver it looked like it gave off its own light, and little Mira's matched adorably.
"Excellent moves there, Alex," the Ramlord said, as he hefted his daughter higher on his waist. "It has been a while since I have done the marriage dance with two wives. Some say it's even trickier than with only one, and I've never attempted it with three."
"Thank you, I only learned yesterday," I chuckled.
Alex, you look pretty,
Mira chimed in, and I winked at her. Not as pretty as you, I said, as her father set her back on the ground, and I took one of her hands so I could twirl her around. Look at you! You look like a sparkly little star. She giggled and spun around some more.
Alex, we has to dance now. We is married.
Right, how could I forget? I said. And Dawn, Shay, and Zoe all either pressed a hand to their hearts or their mouths at the cuteness. So I decided to really ham it up for the little one and bowed to Gavlane. Honorable Lord Mech, may I please dance with your daughter? The Ramlord played along and rubbed his chin as if he was thinking.
I don't know.
Daddy!
Mira whined and tugged his pant leg as she gave him the full force of the puppy dog pout.
Please?
I suppose so,
Mech said, and he smiled down at her when she cheered.
Thank you, Daddy,
she squealed. Yeah, thanks, Dad, I parroted, as I scooped her up and whisked her out onto the floor where others were dancing to the music that had just started up. Everyone on the floor was dancing freely, so I didn't have to worry about following along with any steps, and I was just able to spin us both around to the beat. Her little giggles were infectious, and by the third time I dipped her without her knowing just to hear her shriek, I was laughing too. Finally, the song came to an end, and I trounced us both back to our group so I could hand her off to her mother.
Mama!
Mira giggled and hugged the dear woman around the neck.
Did you see us?
Yes, you looked like you both had a good time,
Dawn said.
Your best,
Mira said as she gazed at me. M'lady. I took her chubby little hand and placed a kiss on the back of it.
Are you almost ready to give Clan Skeros their gift of the almighty dodgeball?
Mech asked me. Sure, I said as I grabbed three tankards from a passing servant and passed two to my wives. When do we do that? Is there another gong or something?
"Gift-giving is typically at your own leisure," the Ramlord explained. "You simply approach the guests of honor and proclaim you want to give them a gift. And then you may do a small demonstration for the whole hall, if necessary."
"Are you ready to demonstrate with me?" I asked with a mischievous smirk over the rim of my mug before I took a sip.
"If I didn't know any better, I would say you just want an excuse to throw things at me," Mech said.
"Always," I shot back. "Now come on, let's get this over with." I took a large swig of mead, and then I handed my tankard off to Zoe while the Ramlord and I sought out our favorite Terrans.
"Ambassador," Siskern said as he sloshed a little mead down the front of his tunic. "Have you met Zera? Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she beautiful? But you better not be jealous, because she is my wife now."
Mech and I exchanged amused glances at our drunk friend, and we watched him make googly eyes at his new wife, who was across the hall and chatting with Amaya. "Something tells me you started pre-gaming a little before this shindig, didn't you?" I asked, and put a steadying hand on the raptor man's upper arm, so he wouldn't list too far to the side and fall over.
"I'm drunk," he admitted in a loud stage whisper. "But my uncle is drunker." "I resent that," Gris boomed from just a few feet away. "Don't get in a match with me, boy, on who can hold their liquor or not. I will drink you straight down into the dark hells of Tear herself. Don't test me." "So what can I do for you, my friends?"
the regent asked in an overly loud voice, so he could drown out his uncle. "I have a gift for you and Gris," I said. "One that requires a demonstration."
"Oh, wonderful!"
The Terran Asher Lord clapped his hands and then wrapped an arm around his new wife Issa.
"Let's see it."
"We will need some space to perform, my lord," Mech said. And we both tried not to laugh our asses off when the two reptile men scrambled to move people and furniture out of the way in their drunken states. It was the best entertainment of the night by far. When a good space was opened up in front of the little camp Siskern and Gris had on the floor, Mech and I faced off in front of each other. "The gift I have prepared for you, most esteemed lords, is a gift from my homeland," I began in the traditional way the Ramlord taught me, even though the words sounded awkward in my mouth and fell on drunk ears. "As you know, I am a traveler, and where I'm from, we have a lot of clever tactical exercises we pass down to our children in order to prepare them for the future." Of course, the preparation I was talking about was teamwork and hand-eye coordination. But I was hoping the Terrans would choose to think of this in the light I wanted them to.
"What is this exercise?"
Issa asked, as she wiped some of her vivid pink hair out of her eyes. "It is called dodgeball." I caught a round pillow in between my hands that Jenner tossed me from the sidelines. "Or just dodge if you're not doing this with balls. The point is in the name, to dodge. There are two teams of equal numbers and a series of balls or projectiles set up in between them on the floor." To demonstrate, I set the round pillow down between Mech and me, and then we both took several steps back.
"How do you dodge if the projectile remains in the middle of the room?"
Gris asked. "Good question," I said. "When I count to three, Lord Mech and I will race for the ball, try to take it, and then try to hit the other. If you hit them on any part of their body with the projectile, it is a point to that team, and that person is out."
"When you say out, you mean like dead,"
Siskern clarified. "Pretend dead," I said. "But yeah, it's kind of like that. It's designed for you to take it seriously, so if out means dead, then go for it. Just don't actually try to kill each other during the exercise. Gris, would you like to do the honors by counting?" The frill-necked dino man clapped his hands in excitement.
"Get ready! 3, 2, 1, go!
At the signal, Mech and I ran full tilt toward the balls. Because I was faster, I ended up reaching the ball first. But when I tried to hit him with it at the ankles, he jumped over it, spun around, and kicked the ball upward so he could catch it in his hands.
He moved quicker than I was anticipating, and even though I made a valiant effort to leap backward, the ball hit me square in the chest.
Ah, that's just a small demonstration of what this game is about, I said as the hall erupted in applause.
The teams can be as big as you want or as small as you want. This exercise can also be modified several ways to fit any sort of skill set you're trying to improve on. For example, if you're trying to free prisoners who were taken from your team, you can adjust the rules that way and make it a team-building reconnaissance exercise. The possibilities are really limitless. Go nuts.
There are definitely things I can do with my soldiers with this training exercise,
Griss's Varthan wife said as her cat ears pricked up in interest.
Well, you've made my wife happy, and that's all that matters,
Griss joked to a chorus of raucous laughter and backslapping all around him. You may use it in any way you see fit, I said graciously, and bowed again.
I want to do this now,
Siskern announced loudly as he handed off his umpteenth tankard of the night.
Everyone who wants to play dodge, grab a pillow and meet on the dance floor.
A small bit of pandemonium took place as several people decided they wanted to try throwing pillows at each other in a free-for-all that ended up being more of a drunken rave pillow fight. You really do need balls for this to work properly, I commented to Mech as we both stood on the sidelines and watched the bloodbath take place.
Yes, but I wouldn't trust this lot with anything but pillows, the Ramlord remarked.
You and me both, buddy, Horace snorted, and I turned to look at him over my shoulder. What, you don't want to join in? I needled.
No, thank you, he said. I'm waiting for the magic show to start. I heard they booked a troupe of illusionists for the main entertainment. Everyone's raving about it. I guess they're really popular in the upper echelon.
I don't know, H, I said, as I watched the shameless bacchanalia take place on the dance floor. Then I spotted Griss wrench his arm back and absolutely hammer Bardas in the face.
I think this might be the highlight of the evening, but say what you want.
Another banging of the gong rang out throughout the hall, and this time it was accompanied by a dramatic dimming of the torches and braziers.
Oh, it's starting!
The Falcon Man squealed under his breath. What are you, a 12-year-old girl? I teased, and received a shove for my trouble.
Hey, drink more of this, Horace said, as he grabbed my mug from Shay, and he shoved it into my hands roughly enough that some of the mead slopped out over the rim.
Think of it as fun juice.
Fun juice? I deadpanned.
Yes, if you drink it, you become more fun, he said with his trademark shit-eating grin.
You're gonna regret saying I'm no fun, I threatened, but I drank my mead anyway.
Everyone, gather round, gather round!
A musical voice rose above the crowd, as a fanciful man bedecked in red rubies and a weird crimson lycra-like material led a string of other strangely dressed characters that could have come out of Candyland into the hall.
Who among you would like to open their minds into a different world, a world of illusion?
The hall broke out into excited applause as the fanciful characters paraded around the guy I decided to dub as Lord Licorice. Each member of the troupe either had a dazzling skill to show, or some type of illusion to perform one by one until it felt like the one time I did security for Cirque Italia and always caught the tail end of the show. It was cool, but I always wanted to see the beginning when all of the performers came out, so this was way better. Two members who resembled some type of monkeys did a contortionist act so complex it was hard to separate one from the other. And they blurred together in a completely unbroken ring and rolled along on the floor like a runaway tire. After the contortionists, out came a pair of beasts, and my eyes flew wide open as I took in the half-Bengal tiger and half-spider creatures. And spiders and I were not friends. Period.
Holy f-,
I said, and then jumped when both opened their large tiger mouths and roared.
Oh my! Look at how beautiful they are!
Shay said, and actually leaned closer to the tiger spiders, and I had the sudden urge to snatch her back and shove her behind me, but I resisted the urge. After all, both creatures had thick iron collars around their necks, and they were each being restrained by two large dudes bigger than my buddy Thass, so I was mostly certain they were safe. like 86% certain. That certainty suddenly dropped down to a whopping 11% when both tiger spider tamers actually took the ferocious beasts off their thick chain leashes. And I was glad I wasn't the only one who looked a tad nervous about this, as the circle around the performers widened while people shuffled back. The tamers I decided to name Siegfried and Bigfried, just for my own amusement, then unleashed a pair of whips that seemed to shoot off fireworks every time they were lashed. With every crack, the tiger spiders fell into a choreographed dance of leaps, bounds, and even backflips, and the fireworks left behind hoops for them to jump through with their sparkling ashes. The finale of this epic display of disciplined acrobatics ended with both tiger spiders jumping through one hoop from opposite sides. When they collided in midair, they both exploded in a shower of golden sparks that caused most people in the crowd to scream and gasp. The two tamers waved to the sound of applause and jogged out of the center. Then a half a dozen bearded dragon types swooped in to take the place of the tamers, and they captivated the audience by juggling flaming torches so fast the streaks they left behind formed pictures depending on the position of their juggling. When they'd cycled through several shapes like stars and flowers, etc., another guy in what looked like a mystical wizard's cape opened a black square box no bigger than his palm. When he did, a glittering cloud floated up to the ceiling, and it blanketed the banquet hall until it looked like we were staring up into a sky full of dark storm clouds. The dark clouds rumbled with real-sounding thunder, and bright flashes illuminated patches of indigo, fuchsia, purple, and turquoise until the sky looked like a rave.
"Tonight will be a night you will never forget,"
Lord Licorice announced, just as the sky opened up and actually began to rain lightly.
"It's actually raining,"
Zoe said as she lifted her face to the ceiling with her eyes closed. I watched her with a smirk as her ears flattened out parallel on either side of her head, so she wouldn't get water in them. It made her look like she was wearing a hat. And in that moment, I locked eyes with Shay, who had the same gushy expression on her face as I probably did when she observed the Catwoman. Then a muted trumpet sounded, and two more of Mr. Candyland's brigade wheeled out a large glass box and unloaded it in the middle of the stage. The rain ceased, and the clouds overhead went quiet while Lord Licorice circled around the clear cubicle.
"Now, my ladies and lords, my humble troop and I ask you all for volunteers who are willing to enter the mysterious plane of illusion,"
the Scarlet Liberace man said with dramatic sweeping gestures appropriate for his outlandish nature. Several hands shot up into the air as the troop characters wound their way through the crowd. One of the contortionists approached us and held out a beckoning hand for Zoe, and she blinked in surprise.
"Me?"
she asked, and then looked toward me. "Do you want to go?" I asked her.
"I want to know how it works,"
she admitted with a faint blush. "Of course you do," I said, and kissed her on the cheek. "Go on, and tell me all about it after."
"Okay."
A bright smile lit up her face, and she hugged both Shay and me before she went off with the monkey contortionist. As long as it wasn't something with the tiger spiders, I was sure it would be fine.
"Yes, yes, gather inside the cube,"
Lord Licorice said as he gestured for the small crowd amassed in the center.
"See what the plane of illusion has to offer."
I noticed Dawn, Mira, and the two new Terran wives among the others selected to see Into the Beyond or whatever, and as I watched them all being shuffled into the transparent box, something niggled at me as odd, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
"Have you noticed?"
Shay remarked in a pensive tone.
"They've only chosen females."
I squinted down at the cube and saw she was right. "Why would—" I tried to ask, but I was interrupted by the crash of that obnoxious gong.
"Feast your eyes, lords and ladies,"
Lord Licorice said, as he lifted his cane to the dark ceiling still shrouded with storm clouds.
"On the power of illusion!"
A bolt of lightning came down and struck the man's cane, and the hall exploded in an intense white light that completely blinded me and everyone else in the audience. Then a terrible roaring sound like the wind of the endless storm disoriented my blind state even more, followed by an intense shockwave. And just when I was about to panic at having two of my senses compromised, everything faded back to normal. The wizard clouds were gone, the lights were restored, and everyone who had climbed into the cube, troop members and Lord Licorice included, had vanished without a trace.